Welcome to Generation Radio Podcast, where the focus is on Arkapuna and their families. We are here each Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on the Oldies Channel, 101.1. You can listen to these shows at any time, any place, and even on your smartphone at generations808.com. We will bring to you resourceful information from our generation's team of experts in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore ways to make your life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors. Here's your host and publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
Okay, welcome back to Generations Radio. I am Percy here, your host every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. So thank you very much for tuning in if you're in your car or if you're getting ready to go off to tee off at the golf course. So thank you very much for tuning in. And don't forget that you need to tell your friends, neighbors, buddies at work, people that you know are taking care of your parents or you're older yourself. This is a great resource show, and I get comments all the time. If you're a little tech savvy, all you got to do is go on your laptop or computer, type in generations808.com, and pull up all our past radio shows, and every topic will be listed for every show. So if you're looking for Alzheimer's or Medicare or long-term care or caregiving or just active aging, it's all there. So thanks for tuning in here on 101.1. And, you know, guys, this is the best channel for our 50, 60-plus age group. I listen to all the time. And if you have Spectrum, it's G3866. What was it? 866? 833? Looks on Spectrum.
863.
You can listen to this show or the radio in your house while you're vacuuming and you don't want to watch TV. And by the way, I do it when my wife goes, "Honey, you know, we've been watching sports for the last 4 hours. Can we change the channel?" Anyway, it's a great channel, and I appreciate it. G3 here is our engineer. Welcome to the show, everybody, and good morning. And today, I met this guy about two or three months ago?
Yeah.
I heard about this guy, Larry Grimm. You know what the first thing I do, Larry?
What do you do?
I Google you.
Good.
And I'm like, wow, this guy's got a lot of information here. He's kind of getting into my area of the world, which is great.
That's right.
And so Mr. Larry Grimm is here. Retired and relocated to Hawaii from?
Colorado.
Oh, Colorado.
I was in Colorado until 4 years ago.
Wow.
Percy, thank you for the invitation. This
yeah.
is such a treat and such a privilege to get to know you. I think I'm a fan of Generations. What a treasure trove of resources and so well vetted, as you've told me.
Yep.
And
yep.
so trustworthy. I mean, people can go there and know that what they're going to get is solid and dependable, and that trust is the big thing.
Yeah. So, Larry, what I always do every show is our listeners want to know who you are. So
yeah.
give us a little background on yourself, because I love your background.
Well, thank you very much. I'm an ordained Presbyterian minister, United Presbyterian Church USA, and I have served in congregations in Texas and then in Colorado up until several years ago, and then I moved into long-term care as a professional chaplain. So I've been trained as professional chaplain, pastoral care, and have worked in both long-term care and hospice care. I came to the island about 4 years ago, really because I'm retired and I wanted to just take some time to meet a friend here that I grew up in Kansas
really?
City. Yeah.
Wow.
He was moving here from Hamburg, Germany, and so we connected on Facebook, and he's. So I came here to spend 3 months.
I was happens all the time.
This is a common story. I know. I've
yeah.
heard it before. I was going to be here 3 months and then go back to my kids in Colorado and my adult children who are married with kids. And I fell in love with the place. I fell right in love with the place. It was just such a beautiful experience, not only of...
Have you been to Hawaii before that?
I had only one time gone to Maui to do a wedding.
Everybody goes to Maui. I love Maui.
But gosh, when I went to the... I said, man, I'm a mountain man. I love the mountains. I don't like the beach. And then I went to the mountain, the windward side, and I saw those mountains, and I fell in love with it. And it seemed like the island was saying, okay, Larry, you can come. You can come. I'll welcome you here. So it was really a profound. And then since I was going to stay, I applied to hospice care with Bristol Hospice and was hired in my late 60s, and I thought, this is great. I gave them 3 years. And after 3 years, I said, man, it's time to do something on my own. And I launched this elder care this coaching of extraordinary elderhood. That's what I call it. Join a global community for your extraordinary elderhood.
Well, that's interesting. Were you doing hospice in Colorado?
I was. I did hospice care in Colorado with a small Christian community there.
Well, that must be very difficult, though. I mean, I've had people on the hospice on the show. We've done articles in hospice. We were actually honored by Hospice Hawaii.
Good.
Before it was called, now it's called Navient Care.
Yeah, right.
I was really privileged and honored to be awarded an annual award from them. And I always tell people that's one thing that we need to take more advantage of. We're all going to pass at some point. It's just a matter of how.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, we have a society that really does not teach people to age well and is not doesn't really trust the process of dying as being a growth process. Dying is the last wonderful event of our lives, and we tend to avoid it and want to do everything we can to discount it. But when given an opportunity, as I think we did in hospice care, families and friends gather around and the patient gets a long-term opportunity, a long-term look at the dying process, and the spiritual dimension of that is then given great attention. And the person follows their heart, the patient follows their heart, we follow our internal instincts, our internal desires, and when that gets taken care of, dying can be a delightful experience.
You know, very well said, Larry. I love what you said. It's
Thank you.
Growth process, because I've dealt with all my clients are seniors, and with my day job, the reverse mortgage, and they stay with me for the rest of their life, typically. And you're absolutely right. I've mentioned this many, many times to families that we need to take advantage of it. Medicare covers almost all of it or most of it.
Yes.
And people don't realize, they think of it as a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done stories on hospice before, but I like the way you said that because it's really important. I had a family member that I knew they were dying. Everybody knew they were dying. And I said, you got to call hospice.
Yeah.
And he did it until the week that person died. And I thought that was very sad. Nobody visited this person for over a year. And I said, you know what? I understand you don't want people to see you being frail and aging.
Yeah.
But there are so many people that love this person.
Yeah.
And that's what was taken away from this person.
Well, so. I have these two images of dying, and one of them is when I was on the East Coast for a while. I flew from Richmond to Raleigh, North Carolina, and that Piedmont area is full of clouds, full of storms all the time, of course. And the puddle jumper jet pilot came on and said, "We're over Raleigh, but I can't land because we have to get through the storms, and I got to look for a place to get through the storm clouds. So I'm going to circle around for a while." And he said, He did, and circled for a while. Then he came out and said, "I've found an opening. I'm going in." And he just zoomed down straight. It felt like it was falling through the clouds. He zoomed down to the landing strip. Well, that's a great image for the way we usually wait for death.
Right, exactly.
Going to wait until the crisis comes.
Well,
in contrast, you come in for a landing in Hawaii, in Honolulu. You've got a long coasting.
Yeah.
You know, approach, and it's so much more comfortable. So
very
much
well
more
said.
Easy.
But let me ask you this, Larry.
Yeah.
The title of this show, guys, is Extraordinary Elderhood. Why did you call that?
Well, because our society wants us to move into elderhood as an aging, just as a decrepitancy. You know, you're going to get decrepit. You're going to lose this. You're going to lose that.
And that's true, though.
We just want you to stand by and take care of yourself with spend a lot of money on pharma and wait until your doctor tells you what to do. Well, I want people to be empowered in their elderhood and empowered, again, in that long approach to dying and to enjoy every step along the way and be empowered to make choices. Elderhood, I'm looking at as a stage of life. You move from adulthood to elderhood. It's almost like moving from productivity and role-playing and playing important roles to attention on your soul. You move from being external to internal. And there are lots of options and opportunities to create an extraordinary life in that stage of life that we don't pay attention to. And I have that opportunity. I have the knowledge and I have the skill of enabling people to define what they want rather than to be victims. I don't want people to be victims of their aging.
Yeah, that's very true. But what made you decide to specialize or focus on aging and seniors?
Seniors. Yeah, well, as I said, I'm a stage theorist. I like stage theory. And when I started into it myself in late stage, I recognized that I have my own limitations. I have got my own stuff going on. And if I don't have a sense of where I'm going and what I want, then I'm going to be, again, a victim at the hands of aging itself. And so that was a personal trigger. Then I started reading a lot about adult elderhood. There are some really good books. Gawanda, nurses, some doctors. Louise Aronson wrote a book on elderhood. It's just become a more popular and accepted concept as a stage of life. And because I'm a stage theorist anyway, and what I do, it really appealed to me. So I thought, okay, here's this stage. How do you identify what's going on in this stage of life? And I began to listen to people in terms of their stage. And so I listened. I was working with the folks. They were telling me what it was about.
Yeah.
And I listened to my patients. I listened to the families. And I realized that I don't want people to be victimized.
Yeah, we call it the third stage of life. You know, we have childhood, we have adulthood, and now this is elderhood.
Exactly.
In fact, I can't remember what year it was, 2000, it must have been about 2004 or 5, maybe it was 6. The first TV, regular segment on TV was called The Elderhood Project.
Oh.
And my good buddy, since deceased, Kirk Matthews from KHUN, was the host of this segment. And I was actually one of his first sponsors, and I met him because I was in aging. And the rest is history. Now you see every channel just about has something aging well. They call it Kupuna shows. All
Kupuna
these kind
Kupuna
of
power,
Kupuna power, Brickwood over there.
Excellent.
And it's something that, you know, like I was telling you before we started the show. 20 years ago, I got into this reverse mortgage business because I saw the aging boom coming. And I was only 42 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a senior right now, if you want to call me a senior. I'm 62.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's all coming out as we get older. And all the baby boomers now have taken care of their parents, saw them age with either well or bad. And now, like I said, you're seeing these seniors go through the stage in life. But it is something that's why we've been doing what we do at Generations, is providing resources, solutions, options. So they can understand, because if you don't read like you do or go on the internet, you won't know what's available out there.
Exactly.
You know? So I liked what you did. You know, are you still doing workshops at Epiphany, by the way?
I am. We're working up a long-term program, but in my approach to the gathering people together, to the global community of for your extraordinary elderhood, what I want to do is offer one-on-one counseling or coaching. One-on-one coaching, I like to prefer to say that. And then we have small groups, which I call elder guilds, because we're coming together, 9 people or so online, to look at the best practices for aging. What are you doing? And here are these issues. You know, sharing in small group. One of the worst things that people experience in their aging process is getting isolated.
Yes.
Lonely, isolated.
Very common.
Cut off. And now, though we've gone through, and it's been aggravated by pandemic, but it also has proven to us that we can connect in meaningful ways on this tool we have called the internet. So elder guilds, one-on-one coaching, and then an adulthood academy, an elderhood academy that provides learning opportunities. And I'm in conversation with Epiphany, Episcopal Church, Kaimuki,
off of Harding,
that is just really insightful now. And they're looking at the fact that they've got this rich resource of elders in their community and in Kaimuki that can be nurtured and strengthened through this and offering all three of those things, even in the church.
Yeah, so guys, I would probably just call Epiphany Church. You can Google that or look in a phone book or just drive over there Sunday morning, talk to Father Chris over there, and he's good friends with Larry. Find out when they have the next workshop. I've been to them myself, and that's how I vet people, Larry. I went to your workshop.
Yeah.
And he does an hour workshop. Very insightful. You know, one of the things that interests me is that when I did my research many years ago, I realized our church as well had a lot of elders. And right. So I did my research, and he goes, yeah, it's a fact. As we all get older, we're going to want a safe haven. We want a safe place, something that's common and we know, we're familiar with. And a lot of them go back to the church.
Safe haven. Yeah. I love that term, yeah. Percy. That's perfect.
But it's true.
But you're so accurate because it's such a – because the feeling of so often for elders is as we do lose some of our capacity, we feel as though we are targets of just the worst part of humanity almost. And so a safe haven is a place where people can connect.
It is.
And they can be welcomed with each other and understood and connected. It's just invaluable.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. People seek that safe haven. That and kind of interesting that Honolulu means harbor, doesn't it? A safe harbor?
Gathering place.
Gathering. That's Oahu, I thought. But
yeah.
Honolulu. Anyway, the safe harbor idea is just beautiful.
It is. But let me ask you this. So when I did my research, spirituality really hits home as you get older. What's the connection between that and aging?
That is really a good question. And it's a place where I put a lot of my attention because I think there's a transition that we go through. First of all, we go through a transition from adulthood to elderhood. I told you that people have to give up oftentimes their sense of identity of who they are as their job, you know, when you introduce yourself, you're the mortgage, reverse mortgage guy, you're the generations guy. Well, that changes, and we become more focused on the internal dimensions of life. And I think there are five spiritual tasks that come with that. I call them spiritual tasks, and they have to do with, I'm going to name them now, grieving is one. The second that I look at
write this down, guys, because I did myself grieving. Because I went to his workshop, and he does cover this. It's very, like it is short, but you hit the point, right.
Mm-hmm. Grieving, sharing your stories or sorting out your stories, forgiving, preparing, and then letting go.
Well, I like forgiving.
Do you?
Because so many people, you know, I work with seniors all day long, and they hold grudges against one child or the other because of one incident that happened in their life, or this is the problem child. You know, every family has a problem child,
yeah.
Or the what do you call that? The
black sheep
of the family. And forgiving is to me, and I tell my client, forgiving is really huge because you don't want regret in your life, you don't want a negativity in your life, and it festers,
yes,
over years and years.
And these things, Percy, I think, come up within the whole heart. As we age, and we are challenged to meet what comes up in our souls, and the consciousness of the grudge, or the consciousness of I haven't forgiven that person, or worse, I haven't forgiven myself, has to be dealt with in order to clear the deck for the more wonderful things that are coming.
So let me just start. So guys, we're here for the whole hour.
Yeah.
But I wanted to kind of break that down. Was I love what you just said. Now, so I understand forgiving. Grieving is one thing I think I found that people that go through hospice don't understand that after the person passes, you actually have grief counseling available.
That's right. We have grief counseling.
A lot of people don't know that.
That's right. Most hospices offer that opportunity for the family members and the friends, anybody to take advantage of that grief process. And grieving is someone said that grieving is loving what is no longer there, which I like. And it's this loss, and you feel like a part of yourself is left. so that's for the family members, but also for the person who's going into aging. As we are aging, we experience a lot of grief, Percy, because look at the losses. What are the losses that you can count? Those of you who are listening, you can count losses that you've had, of family, of friends. Oh, I lost my home. I lost my job. My sense of identity of who I am, I'm no longer my...
the manager of the company, the
exactly,
owner of the company.
Exactly.
The boss.
Or as a kupuna, I'm just not getting enough any respect from my family now.
Yes.
So
true.
And some family members are dependent upon, want think that they have to have their oldest daughter take care of them, or else, you know, something's wrong with them. And they go into a facility and they lose that possibility. And a lot of what people experience in this elder years is grief.
It's very difficult. I tell a lot of seniors, you know, it gets to be hard as you get older, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally. But that's why I like the spirituality side. So we talk about grieving, forgiving. Mm-hmm. What's the other three?
Sorting out stories. It's interesting. You know, we sort out our stuff. People love to sort out their stuff. Well, what makes sorting out stuff so hard is the stories behind it. Is my mother left me a bunch of costume jewelry, and I thought, what did you leave me these for? Doesn't make any sense to me. But there was the story behind it.
Yes.
That was important to her. And she's leaving something of herself in that item. Well, what I like to do is say that some of the story, you know, we go and listen to the elders and they repeat their stories.
I love that.
I love it too. I consider myself a professional story listener like you do.
Oh, absolutely.
And the story that gets repeated over and over again, I listen to it and I think, why is that person continuing to use this story? Well, they're reclaiming, they're bringing into the present the emotional experience of that event.
Right.
It's called remembrance. In Greek, it's anamnesis. But it's a remembrance, and you can see the person's face change, you know, as they tell the story. If I told you the story of the birth of my younger daughter, you know, at home, we did a home birth. I mean,
wow,
it was wonderful. I caught my daughter.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, when I tell that story, I can experience that.
Bring you back to the right of that day.
Exactly. And it brings it into the present, is what I say. And so when I listen to the story over and over again, I think, what is the experience that person is now having as they tell that story? You must feel such joy. I do. Or you'd be so proud of what you did in the Army. I am. You
know, that's so true. That's their identity. But I think as children of seniors, we need to embrace that, enjoy it, because you can't hear it. So, you know, these stories are so self-identifying of that person.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things that I did, I made a documentary of my parents' lives.
Oh, good.
And it took me about 6 months.
Excellent.
We got pictures. I remember the old 8mm, tick, 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 tick. I converted it to digital. Well, my sister converted it to digital. We had pictures of us growing up, pictures of my parents when they were young. It was amazing stories. But I think that is so key in people's lives, because that's one thing that I love about my job is working with seniors, that these stories are so fantastic. Okay. And I tell them, you need to tell this to your kids and your grandkids.
Absolutely.
How you met your husband.
Absolutely.
How difficult college was. And that's one of the things I think today the young kids don't understand, how hard it was for your parents. You know?
Yeah,
and they need to know that.
They can't even imagine it, and they need to hear the story in order to be able to appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. So we're here with Larry Grimm, retired pastor, hospice worker,
chaplain,
and now an extraordinary elderhood coach. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back talking about the other three topics on grieving.
Excellent.
Besides grieving and forgiving. And sorting out stories. But we're here with Larry Grimm. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
In 2021, take the confusion out of Medicare. The Copeland Insurance Group will help you understand the exciting new plans with increased benefits for seniors 65 and above, veterans, the disabled, and those that qualify for extra help. Contact Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group at 808-591-4877. 808-591-4877. Mahalo.
You've worked hard to make it to this point, faithfully paying your mortgage and putting money into your home. Now you can tap into this equity with the reverse mortgage loan designed specifically for those age 60 and older. Percy Ihara, Hawaii's reverse mortgage specialist, NMLS number 582-944. Let him show you how you can use a reverse mortgage to gain a new source of funds, just as you would with a traditional home equity loan that you would get at a local bank, but with additional benefits. Give him a call at 808-944-4444. 234-3117, and he'll show you how a reverse mortgage could be an important tool for you. He lives and works right here in Hawaii and understands Hawaii borrowers. Not applicable in all states. Some states may impose a higher age requirement. Visit reversefunding.com/equity-elite for details. Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS number 1019941. Telephone 888-494-0882. For licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Licensed Mortgage Banker, New York State Department of Financial Services. Again, call 808-234-3117.
Thank you for coming back. This is Jet Percy and Mr. Larry Grimm here talking about the extraordinary elderhood.
Yes.
And we're talking about the five topics that he covers in his workshop and his coaching. Larry, we talked about grieving, forgiving, mm-hmm. and sorting out stories.
Yes.
What's the other two?
Preparing and letting go. Now, preparing is something that's external oftentimes, and that's good. I mean, people need to have living wills, we need to have last will and testament in place. We need to have all of our financial stuff taken care of as we age. All of those externals are very important in order to be calm, in order to be relaxed, in order for you to know that things are taken care of and you can rest assured that things will pass on to others. This is a little bit of an aside, but I had one woman who wanted to give all of her kids. She had a number of adult children. She wanted to give everything in her home, which were antiques and other artful things, to her kids. And what she did was give each child a set of dots, colored dots. Each child had a different color. And she said to them, now you go through the house and put on the back of the paintings, on the things that are on the shelves, the knickknacks, what you want, put your dot on it. And so they decided between themselves what they wanted, and she didn't have to sort things out like that. So she was preparing for them to inherit what she wanted to give them, and they were a part of the process. It was really a creative experience. So, but preparing is external, but it is also, and certainly one of the things that you and I talked about is that housing is such an issue.
Yes.
With aging. How do you imagine yourself aging as you, what are your needs going to be? I did something. I asked my PCP, given my health condition right now, how did she imagine I would die?
Well, how long you take before you pass on?
Yeah. How do you think I'm going to die? Well, she said right now you're likely to die from a heart attack or a stroke, and you may not die from the stroke, you know.
Right, absolutely.
So when we start think about preparing, what do you know about these places? What do you know about the care that you can receive? Have you researched some of the options in long-term care? Do you know about private pay? Do you know about the difference between private pay and Medicaid? This is a way of preparing also so that as I age, I'm confident that I have things in place for myself and my family, and we can enjoy instead the long approach to the runway.
Well, you just brought up a factor that you said yourself and your family.
Yes.
Your family has to go through this with you, support you, hopefully they understand. And you're right, people need to plan. I'm actually have a designation called CLTC, Certified in Long-Term Care.
Oh, okay.
I'm certified in long-term care planning. Oh. That's why I know so much about this stage, once you need care. And I always ask families and seniors, like, next time you have a get-together with your kids, ask them, you know, Percy was talking about as dad gets older and I might need care, so look at your kids straight in your eye and goes, when dad needs care, are you going to take care of me? And see what they say. Yes, no,
exactly.
Maybe, I cannot, I'm too busy, or I have my own kids, or...
Exactly.
Sorry, Dad, you're
exactly.
on your own.
Exactly.
It is something that I always, and I do workshops before the pandemic, I was like, listen, guys, people spend more time planning a vacation to Vegas than they do about the long-term care needs.
It's true.
And it is so, so, so
yeah.
important.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're looking at long-term care insurance, get it before you're 78 years old, 79. It can be more costly as you get older, but... When I got my long-term care policy at 58, I think I pay like $2,400 a year.
Uh-huh.
And so when I talk to even insurance agents and financial advisor attorneys, he goes, you know, you should recommend long-term care insurance. He goes, no, it's too expensive. So I tell the story. No, I got it at 58.
Uh-huh.
And I think I paid $2,400.
Uh-huh.
And I go, is that a lot? He goes, no, it's not a lot at all. Well, why do you tell people that it's expensive? It's not expensive.
Right.
You want to pay $2,400 a year or $2,400 a month?
Right. Exactly.
So my parents got theirs at 78 years old. We're utilizing it now for my mom, but it's something that I think we don't, that's one of the reasons why I do this show, I do the magazine. There's so much misinformation out there, even from professionals.
Yes.
So unless you walk yourself through the qualifying process,
uh-huh.
I'll give you a good example. When I was younger, I would promote long-term care insurance, and I knew you couldn't get it if you have cancer, a certain stage of cancer, a certain stage of diabetes, certain issues with strokes and heart attacks. So I was talking to a client of mine. He goes, you know, Percy, you're right. He had a stroke. I saw the client about 8 to 10 years later on. And he said, Percy, by the way, I got long-term care insurance because you recommended it. I said, you did? But you had a heart attack. You had a quintuple bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't as versed as I am today.
Mm.
I said, how did you qualify? He goes, you know what the agent said? He goes, next time you have a heart procedure, you're going to die.
Oh.
So you're never going to use that long-term care insurance policy. So in long-term care insurance companies will approve you as long as you're back to healthy.
Uh-huh.
And he got it.
Cool.
Even somebody with cancer.
See, that's the kind of coaching for an extraordinary elderhood.
Well, let me know if you what you want to do. But I want to talk about, you know, okay, we got one more. We talked about the four.
Yeah.
What's the last one?
Letting go.
Letting go, yes.
I was walking past one of my patient's rooms in Denver area, and the daughter came out. The mother was dying, and the daughter came out and said, Pastor, you know, she just won't let go. And I said, wow, I don't blame her. You know, letting go is one of the hardest things that we do.
Yeah, stuck in our ways.
Yeah, it's attributed to to Dalai Lama, this saying that what matters in the end is how well we learn to love, how well we learn to live, and how we learn to let go. It's also Howard Thurman probably who said that. But letting go is something that we do all through our lives, but eventually it's something that we do have to do at the end too. One of the things that I've done as a coach with my dying patients is actually to give them a guided meditation in letting go.
A guided meditation?
In letting go of their life.
Huh.
At their last breath. And it's something that I do, and I've prepared for people. It's something that sometimes has shape around their religious belief. You know, if they're Christian, I have certain Christian language, or if they're Buddhist, I try to shape it according to what I know of Buddhism. But letting go, you can imagine that letting go is just a frightening thing at the end until you release and let your breath go and let your body run down, and then you're okay with it. But we practice letting go all through our lives, and this goes back to the grieving place. Also, grief often becomes an indicator for us of what we are challenged now to let go of. The identity issues, the preparations that we thought we were making, the self-identity that we've had, we have to let go of that. Let go of spouse sometimes, let go of friends, family. So letting go is something we practice until the point that where we have to let go of that final breath.
That's difficult, though.
I'm trying to think
of myself. If my parents, they're still alive, or my spouse or my son passed away, how would I deal with that?
Yeah.
Anybody grieves differently, right?
You got that right. Yeah, sure. And when I'm with coaching people, I listen for the ways that are most important to them to grieve. How do they do it? Not how I want them to do it. But I can make suggestions on how to do it if they like. So letting go, yeah, becomes a challenge. And that's part of that spirituality, Percy, you know, in aging, that's unique to aging, in that we're getting closer to the final let go. And we're constantly reminded. My older brother said, when I hit 70, I started to ask how, when, and where. And he, of course, he was talking about his dying.
Right.
How am I going to die? When am I going to die? Where am I going to do it? And he was getting himself ready internally, preparing himself for that final let go.
Hope he had a funeral plan.
He did.
Seriously.
And that's one of the things that happens, Percy. As you know, when we work close with people who are dying, we tend to get a little bit humorous about it, a little gallows humor maybe. And we don't mean to put anybody down by that humor, but have to be careful. It's sometimes fun just to joke about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because we become so comfortable.
Yeah. Well, kind of on that topic, we were involved with getting the medical aid in dying, Our Care, Our Choice passed in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
We had John Radcliffe on our cover with his buddy, the doctor. I'm sorry, I've completely blanked on his name. And I met John, I talked to John. He was actually very close to my uncle. When I heard he was nearing his passing, and then he finally did the deed, I was actually supposed to speak to him that week, but he couldn't speak at the time. But what is your opinions on that, on from a spirituality side? Because Hawaii was, I think, a 6 or 7 state to pass it. It went actually quicker than I thought. It took, 2 or 3 years,
mm-hmm.
But it went quicker than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to the politician, including my older brother, who's a state senator, helped push this thing through.
Excellent.
What is your thoughts on that?
Oh, I affirm it personally and very much so. And theologically, I understand God requires of us to approach each person as a moral agent in their lives, a capable moral agent all through their lives. And so what this does is recognize that each of us is a moral agent with regard to our dying as well, and that we have a positive participation in that. Now, let me tell you about a couple of experiences that I had as hospice chaplain. May I do that?
Yeah, please.
No names, of course. One gentleman was a brain surgeon and had contracted Parkinson's. And over the years, of course, he had to give up his brain surgery practice. He was very skilled, very well known, apparently, in the area. And he got to the point, he opted for the Our Care, Our Choice. And he didn't want a whole lot of people around. He had one person in his mind that he wanted to be part of it. And I was there the night that he chose to die. And I talked with him about it, and he was so comfortable with it. We had time of prayer and reflection, and he was so convinced that this was the best thing that he could do for himself, that he certainly impressed me with the conviction and how what a relief it was. It's kind of funny. I had a conversation with him, and then that prayer, and then he left the room and went to dinner. And as I was walking out of the building, I saw him in the cafeteria having his dinner with his friend at the table. And I thought, nobody realizes that this is his night to go. And he knows it, and this is his last supper that he's enjoying. So it was his choice. It was all the way he wanted it. He went back to his room, and he mixed the medication, and he took it and died. Another person that I knew, another of my patients, was a woman who was very, very musical. She used to play the piano beautifully. She wrote books. She was she had come to Hawaii from Connecticut, and she said, I was reborn when I came to Hawaii. This is where I belong. And she was an elegant woman. Well, she contracted cancer, I think, of the breast, and her left side was paralyzed. And she said to me, she pointed to her left arm and she said, this isn't me. And so she had chosen to use the medical aid and chosen the night. She hired a death doula who helped her coordinate all this.
And what is that,
a death doula? Well, a death doula is a word for servant, and we usually associate it with birth. They're like, yes, a midwife, birth, yes, doulas. But this is a death doula who really helps prepare the way for the dying patient to have what they want. They'll be the kind of MC or the coordinator.
Not here, though. Wasn't the main.
Huh? Yeah.
This was here?
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting.
Here.
Yeah, I've heard stories about them.
And they're wonderful people. I mean, yes, they have sensitivity and help organize. The death doula made sure we had champagne for the night.
Oh, made hello, me too.
Made sure the cake was in place that was going to be celebrated. Helped do all the celebration as the way that she wanted it done.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was kind of a event coordinator.
Wow.
But for death itself, very sensitive, very caring. So she invited several people, particular people from her past to be there. She had on the music that she wanted, CDs. Hmm. She invited me to recite a poem. I recited the poem. And one of the attendees, an older woman and a friend, heard the music come on and started doing the hula.
Wow.
For our dying patient, you know, right at bedside. It was just such a beautiful sense of her life. People were laughing and sharing and crying and telling her how much she meant to them. And then finally had the toast with the champagne, and then she took the medication. And it was so respectful. She died with everybody around her, and everyone was peaceful and calm about it because this was her way, the way she wanted it.
So were you at Bristol at the time?
I was.
So Bristol does accommodate...
No. They Bristol do does not have any participants.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, when I found out, there's very few pharmacies, by the way, that you can get the prescription for this. But I believe only one agency, maybe two out of the five that we have in Hawaii, does do counseling for our care, our choice. So and Bristol did not?
No, Bristol did not. We didn't. We were able to be present. Mm-hmm. You know, if the patient wanted us to be present, and part of the Bristol staff, her team was there. Along with me, I was there, and so were a couple of others from Bristol. But we didn't do the medication. We didn't.
Well, you can't do the medication. They have to do it themselves.
Yeah, right.
But do they count? Can you counsel on that at all?
Well, I could listen to her, you know, and work with her on the choice. But she had already made that choice. But if anybody wanted to talk it over with me as a spiritual counselor, I can do that, of course.
So that was one of the things we did a radio show, you know, before John passed. And it was something that I found that, and I'm not saying it's bad or it's wrong or they should be doing it, but many of the hospital agencies did not believe in it, and they actually fought it.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that. I mean, everybody has their own opinions on aging and dying and how we die. And, you know, we did a big story on it, a cover story on that. And so I got emails and talked to a lot of people. And I get it. Everybody has their opinion.
Sure.
And, you know.
Well, in Bristol, I can only say from Bristol that they didn't fight it. They weren't against it. They just simply did not want to be involved in administering it.
Right. I get that. So let me ask you this. You have here a list of things to talk about. These your medical directive?
Yeah, medical directives.
That's really important, isn't it?
Advanced directives are so important. Part of that preparation, if you're going to prepare. And I think everybody ought to have an advanced directive at this point, because any time in life, the way we live our lives, you can go out and have an accident. And
cross the street.
Exactly, crossing the street. And then the advanced directive comes into play. What do you want done? Do you want to have life support? And in my coaching, I would work with people on how to do that. There's several wonderful tools available. Here there's... Kukua Mao has promoted a conversation.
Absolutely.
How to have the conversation, yep. Which is, I think, is the most important part of putting together an advanced directive. Having the conversation with your family and your friends. This is what I want, and I want this to be taken care of. Can you do this for me if I need this, if I'm unable to make my decisions?
Yep.
So, having the conversation is the most important part about putting that together, I think. But advanced directives are essential, especially as we age, because we can become, again, victim of a system that's capitalist, sees a good way to make some money on us.
Yeah. By the way, Kukua Mao is KOKUAMAU.org. Mm-hmm. It's the organization that is supporting all the hospice agencies in the state of Hawaii. I've actually attended the meetings quite a bit. It's been a few years, though. That's why I learned. That's how I really learned about hospice and what they do and what they don't do and what they can do and all the different things about hospice. But it's really, really important. But so I would tell you, go to their website. They have a lot of great resources there. And there's one resource that I always like. It's called Five Wishes.
I like that one, too.
Isn't that great?
Yes. That's my favorite. That's one I have.
Yeah. It just basically asks you questions about end of life. And I think a lot of times, depending on your situation, you want to discuss it with your family. You don't have to, but some people do. I had two of my friends die of cancer a few years back. One decided to do chemo. One decided not to do chemo. And the other person said, you're going to do chemo. The spouse said, you're going to do chemo. It prolonged them 6-8 months. But the spouse, he goes, yeah, man.
Personally, one of the things that I think helps us in the letting go process is in the preparation for some idea, to have some idea about what to expect in dying. Now, no one knows exactly. However, we have so many people who have come back from their dying experience, near-death experience, and have reported some dimensions of what it's like. There's so much positivity in the literature that they have left with us that I think that helps in the letting go process. No one wants to be put in a box and consciously be aware of being in a box, for eternity. And so I think spending some time preparing internally for what I can expect and what I believe will happen is really important, and that's what I tend to do in my coaching, too, to enable people to let go smoothly.
Yeah, your website for Larry Grimm is personal. It's Personal Coaching for Life and Faith.
Correct.
And it's really important, guys. Like, everybody needs a coach. I have a coach in my sales job. And all you guys are my coaches, because that's how I've learned. I'm a gatherer of information,
yeah.
And I disseminate the information.
Right.
I'm not an expert in anything but finance, but I do. I know a lot about all these different topics of aging. And so, Larry, you've been a great resource. But let me ask you this. What can we expect from dying? What's your opinion about that, and how do you coach that?
I coach that as falling asleep. That's the image that I like to use. That we fall asleep every night, and every night we fall asleep anticipating that we're going to wake up. And I think it's the dying process is a falling asleep kind of process and an awakening to, in my opinion, this is my orientation, an awakening to this experience of eternal love and peace that passes all understanding.
Yeah, that's so important. Okay, last topic.
Yeah.
We got a few more minutes left. Hospice in Hawaii, when I realized 10 years ago that we didn't take advantage of hospice in Hawaii, we were number two in the country of dying in the ER, which is not good. New York was number one at the time.
Wow.
About 8 years ago, I found this out. And I think we're still in a lower of the total pool of people using hospice. Why is it important? How do we get families to utilize hospice?
Well, that's a really good question, because there are some mythologies that believe that if you talk about it, you bring it on. And I think we need to get beyond that. We have to be able to talk about dying as part of living, and not see it as a robbing of our life. It's a part of the growing process, as I mentioned. And so talking about hospice care, you can get into hospice care when you have 6 months prognosis of dying, that you're going to die in 6 months. Well, take advantage of that. Take advantage of the resources that are there in the team that surrounds you in a support system of support and love and good care. And so it's not only dying is not only a physical process, it's a family process. As you mentioned,
I hope your family gets involved.
It's a community process, and it's a spiritual process for the dying person.
It is so true. I do encourage that. I've been promoting this for years.
Good.
And it's really important. It just, everybody, family takes it differently.
Uh-huh.
But I always tell people, just remember, everybody loves you. People want to see you, whether you're skin and bones or not. whether you can talk clearly or not.
Yeah.
It's just so important, and to say they love that person. So
absolutely.
Larry, we got to get you back here. I love your conversation. Spirituality, as you get older, even for myself, is really gets me more engaged with my inner self, as you said.
Good.
And it's really important that we, as we age, it has to be a part of your life.
Absolutely.
So don't forget, Epiphany Church, check them out. We'll see you for future workshops. But the website again, Larry?
PersonalCoachingForLifeAndFaith.com. PersonalCoachingForLifeAndFaith.com.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it. Guys, please tell your friends, families, go to Generations808.com. We also have a Facebook page. Check us out there. As always, everybody, have a great weekend. Aloha and live well.
Aloha.
In 2021, take the confusion out of Medicare. The Copeland Insurance Group will help you understand the exciting new plans with increased benefits for seniors 65 and above, veterans, the disabled, and those that qualify for extra help. Contact Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group at 808-591-4877. 808-591-4877. Mahalo.
The combination of interest rates at near all-time lows and home values at near all-time highs create a great opportunity to get the most out of your home's built-up equity. Percy Ihara, Hawaii's reverse mortgage specialist at MLS number 582-944. If you are 60 or older, you might qualify for a reverse mortgage loan that could turn your equity into extra funds for retirement. Take a few minutes to visit with him about ways this plan could work for you. As a certified senior advisor and being certified in long-term care planning, he has helped many older homeowners just like you to retire more freely. Call him now at 808-234-3117. That's 808-234-3117. Not applicable in all states. Some states may impose a higher age requirement. Visit reversefunding.com/equity-elite for details. Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS number 1019941. Telephone 888-494-0882. For licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Licensed Mortgage Banker, New York State Department of Financial Services. Again, call 808-234-3117.